welcome to the InfoWars Nightly News. I'm your host, Ja'Kari Jackson. This is what we have in store for you for this Thursday, December 6th, 2012 edition.
Tonight, Europeans are outraged over the U.S. using the Patriot Act for worldwide spying. Then, Bob Costas sticks to his guns. And Verizon patents DVR technology to detect activity in your living room. Plus our exclusive in-depth backstage interview with Joe Rogan.
First of all, give me a hug, you big beautiful bastard.
You're awesome, man. Good to see you.
That's coming up next on the InfoWars Nightly News.
Top story headline, Europeans outraged over the U.S. using Patriot Act for worldwide spying. Let's take a look. Researchers from the University of Amsterdam have condemned the United States for allowing the controversial Patriot Act to bypass foreign laws and let Americans intercept data from persons internationally. Cloud computing and higher education and research institutions in the U.S. Patriot Act researchers from the Schools Institute in Information Law say that legislation enacted to allegedly protect the security of United States citizens has in the process eroded privacy protections on a global scale. So this is one of those things where you saw it happen over here in the U.S. and you may have thought, oh, well, it's not that big of a deal. It sucks for them. That's kind of the universal attitude. It sucks for them. That'd never happen here. So I'm not saying Europeans could have done anything about, you know, a United States policy, but you got to say something when these things happen. Just like on 9/11, when they started profiling people at the airport, first it was just Muslims and, you know, dark-skinned males, and now they're doing it to everybody. You know, shaking you down, checking your bags, and taking you in the back to do things, and, you know, dropping eggs that turn into bat Homeland Security creatures. So speak up, because if you don't speak up for your rights, you could lose them. So when you see something happen over there in other countries, make sure you speak up for them as well, because it can and probably will come to you. Next story. Bob Costas sticks to his guns on O'Reilly appearance. Okay, so I never thought I'd see the day where I'd actually, you know, appreciate the work of Bill O'Reilly. But he was actually, to me, one of the cooler heads in this interview. You know, he does his, you know, bombardment style of, you know, gotcha kind of stuff. But, I mean, O'Reilly said, hey, you know, I'd rather have my gun in a situation like the Batman shooting. But, you know, Costas really wasn't having it. So let's take a look at this video of Bob Costas on the O'Reilly Factor.
And his buddy says, you better get yourself a gun. And he says, I have 8 of them. Now, the buddy didn't say, you better get a samurai sword. You better
why
get
do they
their
have
hands.
The guns?
All right, they may feel that they need it for protection. They may feel that it's part of a romanticized culture. There's an aspect of this, a kind of Wild West, like some cowboy of what we see in the inner cities, or some of what may be glamorized in gangster rap videos.
So, I mean, my question is to the NFL, to the players, to whatever sports Bob Costas may commentate on. And I'm not going to get up here and pretend like I hate Bob Costas. When I was more into sports, I haven't followed sports, you know, regularly in many years. But when I did, you know, I did appreciate the work of Bob Costas. But to the NFL players, the NBA players, or whatever sport he may, you know, participate in, what do you feel about this guy? He says, you're an aggressive young man who shouldn't own weapons. This is a quote from his MSNBC interview the other day. Young athletes are disproportionately armed. I'm not sure what a proportion of athletes should be armed. And even if all those guns were attained legally, which to me somewhat implies, you know, he's very careful in what he said there, but it to me is somewhat saying that he implies that guns were attained illegally, possibly some criminal activity. And I'm not going to lie that there are plenty of, you know, episodes where, you know, athletes did use guns, you know, bad situations such as Pac-Man Jones. But there are the situations that you don't hear about people protecting their homes with guns. Not just athletes, but celebrities. These people get attacked. You got these young, rich guys. They got big jewelry and cars with all these rims on them and stuff. People might want to attack them, you know, and I don't see why they can't be, you know, legally armed. And even guys, I just don't understand what his problem is with young men arming themselves. Okay, so to say something nice about Bob Costas, in his defense, in this O'Reilly interview, He says had he had more time during that particular episode of the NFL game, he would have gone in to talk about domestic violence and the possible use of drugs and other things that could have factored in, but he still blames the guns. He said, like, the guy didn't have a samurai sword. What if he did have a samurai sword? Would you try to ban samurai swords, Bob Costas? So, whatever, man. Don't try to take my guns, because actually I'm not an NFL player, but I fit into that young male demographic with guns. So keep your comments to yourself. Thank you, sir. Next story. All right. Sex with minors. Supervisor of detective accused of sexually assaulting two teenage boys claims top city officials protected the cop. Phoenix Police Sergeant Mark, I'm sorry, Mark, I cannot say your last name, supervisor of now former Phoenix Police Detective, accused of having sex with two teenage boys, claims that two city officials meddled in his efforts to deal with the detective's work problems. Councilman Tom Simplot and Assistant Police Chief Tracy Montgomery, both openly gay, interfered in his dealings with the ex-cop Chris Wilson. So basically what happened is Mr. Wilson, you know, got caught up in some dirty deeds, allegedly, I guess you should say. And these two members, one a councilman, one an assistant police chief, meddled in affairs of Sergeant Marks. I don't know, dealings. I don't know if you'd call it an investigation, but his dealings with the officer. And he's saying, hey, these guys pretty much interfered with me keeping track of this guy. And now he's out there having sex with young boys, allegedly. So, I mean, there's more to read into the article. I personally am not very happy dealing with the details of the story, but you can definitely go read it yourself, and we'll move on to our next topic. Verizon patents DVR technology to detect activity in your living room. Now, this isn't anything new. I believe Alex, I don't know how many years ago, but you can come back to me for a second, Marcos. Alex did a story, I think it was live on the radio show, streaming live on PrisonPlanet.tv, where he actually opened a cable box and showed people a microphone inside the cable box. People didn't believe it. Xbox openly admits, well, I won't say openly admits, but it's been proven, I guess, to some extent, that the new Xbox consoles can even track you once the thing has been turned off. You know, it's just these motion technologies, and now we have this thing from Verizon. So let's go to the article here. The patent application filed November 29th would home in on ambient action by viewers, including cuddling, fighting, participating in a game or sporting event, and talking. Doing so would address a drawback of traditional advertising, such as and that drawback being your privacy. I mean, when will people draw the line in the sand? These people are openly admitting that they want to spy on you in your own home. They have washers and dryers that want to spy on you, and these people say they can find you cuddling. I'm not sure what kind of advertising that would be. If you're fighting, I don't know, will they call the cops on you if they think you're fighting? I don't know. Sporting events, I'm sure you'll get some ads. But draw the line in the sand. I mean, man, almost said an expert. All right, let's move on to the next story. Shopping stampede, yes, but no economic jolt. Let's take a look here. Spending may well be strong, and that could help us get through another Christmas, said William Emmons, an economist from the Federal Reserve Bank of St. Louis, but the economy is on balance and we're still in an enormous crisis. And speaking of these things, these economic jolts or maybe lack thereof, our own David Ortiz went out to the streets and he asked people what they thought about Black Friday shopping and the possibility of shopping on Christmas Day. So let's see what David found out.
The immense popularity of Black Friday and the introduction of Thanksgiving Day shopping this year is prompting many Americans to question the mental health of people who participate in these events. The success of Thanksgiving Day shopping has also prompted many media outlets to hint that Christmas Day shopping could be introduced to the public in coming years. We asked local Allstonites what they think of this prospect.
Okay, do you want a Black Friday Christmas?
No. No. No.
Why not?
Because you have 364 other days to shop, and I don't think people should shop on Christmas Day.
Absolutely not. I believe that Black Friday for Thanksgiving is already enough for the American consumer, and Black Friday Christmas will destroy everything really Christmas is about, finally destroy it for real.
No. Why not?
First of all, I don't even know what it is.
Absolutely not.
I think that that would ruin Christmas. It just would, to make it its own holiday would be, I don't know. I don't like it. That'd be awesome.
Yes, definitely. I think it would help.
I mean, if they want to be open, go for it. I'm not going to be out there shopping. So I'll be with family, hanging out at home, relaxing.
What are your thoughts when you see videos of people trampling each other for cheap products?
White trash.
That's my thoughts.
I would never, number one, stand in that line. Number two, I would never, like, trample over people to get something at Walmart.
I feel like they're just not connect. They've lost all connection with humans, and they see humans as sort of just a roadblock in their life, I guess. They're just completely closed off to others and just really simple-minded.
Well, I think it's funny, like I said.
When people get trampled, you think it's funny?
I think it's sad.
Yeah. Well, it's kind of hard for me to say because I'm one of them sometimes. It's kind of an adrenaline rush to see, you know, they have five products at this price and there's 20 people going for it. You know, who can win the trophy? Well, I'm working in the medical field and we had a lot of people that actually had broken bones because of Black Friday. You know, they got the TV, but they had a $4,000 doctor bill to go along with it.
According to the National Retail Federation, stores that were open this past Thanksgiving Day experienced a 22% increase in profits over the Thanksgiving holiday weekend. According to the Wall Street Journal, in past years, many retail stores were also closed for Memorial Day, 4th of July, and Labor Day.
What do you think of the fact that a lot of experts say that the discounts on Black Friday aren't even that great?
I agree. Totally agree. They're not that great. They just make you spend more money. So
they're not that good. You can get the same discounts if you just watch the ads and look online.
I didn't know that. That's pretty interesting, though.
I didn't know that either. I mean, the first toy that I ever got from Black Friday was the Game Boy Color, and it was like $40 when we got it. At the time, that was something that cost $200. So I always thought Black Friday was a great deal.
Does the Black Fridayization of society boost holiday morale or hurt holiday morale, in your opinion?
I don't know if it boosts or hurts, but it certainly changes the focus, and that's the problem.
I mean, it can boost it. It can, because, I mean, it's kind of a family thing. A lot of families make it an event to go and get everyone together. So in a way, it can create, like, a family thing.
For InfoWars Nightly News, I'm David Ortiz.
All right, thanks for that great report, David. That's actually pretty entertaining. That lady said it straight out. You're white trash. I've been shopping on Black Friday. I'm not going to hide that from my viewers, but, you know, I went, you know, I got my PlayStation and I got out. I didn't trample anybody. I didn't punch a little girl in the face trying to get a Barbie doll. Just got my stuff. I got out, and that was the end of that. So we'll see. I mean, you know, if stores want to open on Christmas, I'm not sure how well that's going to play, but it could be where society's going. So we'll move on now to our last story. DARPA flying Reaper drones that can surveil entire cities in real time. The records released by the Electronic Frontier Foundation revealed that three branches of the military are operating drones within civilian airspace, and those are the Air Force, Marine Corps, and DARPA. The article goes on to say that they practice with their drones by surveilling you when you're driving your car around town. So there's your surveillance state, because people said, oh, they don't surveil you with drones. You're lying, Alex Jones. There are no drones domestically. And now it's like, yeah, we do. But if you have a problem with it, then there's something wrong with you. Well, if you have a problem with it like I do, you can join us this Saturday, December 8th, right here in Austin, Texas, for our first ever drone mob and video contest. We will be at Zilker Park right here in Austin, Texas at 11 a.m. You can join us out there. I believe that if you guys can be there at least by noon, we're going to try to have a real cool shot where we lift all the drones off the ground. So you can check on Infowars.com. We have a map on there, and you guys can see the exact area if you're not familiar with the area. And basically, the reason why we're doing this is we want to raise awareness of drones. Because people say, oh, you're trying to, you know, desensitize people that drones are flying out, flying around. We're trying to show people that drones are flying around. Because first it was, there weren't any drones, and now there are drones, but you shouldn't have a problem with it. And just like I said in our earlier story, when we see in Pakistan, you know, we see the atrocities that happen there with drones and other places. It's not just there. But when you look at places like that over there and you think, oh, it's over there, it sucks for them. That's the mentality. Oh, it sucks for them that it happens over there. Well, I'm telling you, man, it's coming here. They're using predator drones to track cattle thieves. In the police's defense, those guys were armed, but still, predator drone to track cattle thieves. So join us this Saturday, December 8th, Zilker Park, Austin, Texas, 11 a.m. Even if you don't have a drone, you can come out. You can meet the InfoWars crew. I know myself, Rob Dew, Melissa Melton, I believe David Knight will be out there as well as many other people, some people that you may not be used to seeing on camera. So come out there, meet the InfoWars team. We'll have giveaways. So look for the giant InfoWars flag this Saturday, December 8th in Austin, Texas. All right. And that brings us to our quote of the day. This one from our good friend Bob Costas. Let's take a look. Even if all those guns were obtained legally, you can't have 65 guys in their 20s, aggressive young men subject to impulses, without something bad happening. Bob Costas. As if, you know, all violence is carried out by young men in their 20s. There's plenty of gun violence places. There's plenty of domestic violence places. But, you know, he targets down to this group. And once again, NFL, what do you think about, you know, being, you know, subjected to, you know, this one-size-fits-all aggressive young men, violent with guns category, this gun culture, as Bob Costas calls it. I mean, yeah, America does have a gun culture, but, you know, it's founded on guns. So I don't see what this guy's problem is. But anyway, we had to actually cut some stuff out of the first segment because I ran it too much. So stay tuned after this break. We will be back with an interview Alex conducted this past weekend with Joe Rogan. So stay tuned for that. And after that, we'll be back with a segment with Ben Fuchs and Dr. Wallach. I believe this is segment number 4 of their interview series. It's actually a pretty good interview if you guys haven't seen it. So definitely stay tuned for that. And we'll be back right after this.
Recently, the Harvard School of Health looked at more than a dozen scientific studies concerning fluoride and confirmed what countless other scientists have been documenting for decades. Sodium fluoride in the body reduces IQ and increases cancers. You see, the aluminum industry and the fertilizer industries would have to pay to store all the toxic waste they produce. But instead, they get our counties and cities to pay to put the poison in our water. It's not just fluoride we're getting, but lead, mercury, arsenic, the list goes on. And a lot of this toxic waste comes from China. Unfortunately, fluoride and its derivatives are only one of hundreds of toxins being added to our drinking water. We're battling the globalist on so many fronts. Health is an area where we can all take control of our lives, and it all starts with that basic building block of water. It is time to purify our family's water. The ProPure filtration system with added fluoride filters is the best system for my research to protect you and your family. InfoWarsStore.com already has the lowest prices on ProPure water filtration. But until December 10th, we are going to offer 15% off the already lowest price. I know what I'm giving my family this Christmas. ProPure. Go to InfoWarsStore.com and get 15% off the already lowest price out there with the code WATER15. WATER15 and you get 15% off at InfoWarsStore.com.
As Skynet continues to rise, most Americans have no idea the arsenal their own government is prepared to use against them. Walking weapons and unmanned drones that will find their way to U.S. soil if they haven't already. But the future is not written in stone. Join InfoWars for the first ever drone mob December 8th at Zilker Park in Austin, Texas. This family-friendly event is to inform the public of the weapons that target us. Bring your own drones and spy planes as we make the statement that we don't want our weapons turned against us. Be there at 11 a.m. There will be some amazing giveaways and even a video contest. So bring your camera, because whoever films the best drone video at the event and posts it up on YouTube will receive 1,000 Federal Reserve notes. And be sure to use the hashtag Drone Mob on Twitter and visit InfoWars.com for more details.
Joe Rogan recently came to Austin, Texas, and I took the opportunity to go see my old friend.
And of the dozens and dozens of interviews I've done with Joe, this one is hands down the best. So here it is, my backstage interview with Joe Rogan. Joe Rogan, my old friend, here you are in Austin at the W, at the Moody, big packed house. You're about to go out there in 15 minutes. To you, what is the nature of reality in your core spirit, whatever you want to call it? What is the nature of being on this planet in deep space, orbiting the sun, this magic all around us, and we're busy worrying about how many liters of vodka Lindsay Lohan had?
First of all, give me a hug, you big, beautiful bastard. You're awesome, man. Good to see you.
Good to see you.
I miss you too, man. Yeah, we see each other once a year, and I think you're one of the most misunderstood people on the planet, and I'm glad we're friends, and I'm glad we've been friends for so long. You're an interesting dude, Alex, and you're a real truth seeker, you know? There's a lot of people that don't appreciate you for what you do and appreciate, like, a lot of people don't get to know you. Like, you're a f***ing cool guy. You're a really nice guy to hang around. We've taken Alex to the UFC before. We've done so many comedy shows with you at Cap City and hung out with you. You're a good dude, man.
At its core, I was thinking about this yesterday. What I do, what you do, what a few others do, I think it's that we are real, and that's what people are so desperate for.
Yeah, right or wrong, I'm real as I can be. If I'm wrong, I'm sorry. I didn't think I was wrong. I'll tell you if I'm wrong. But I'm going to be as honest about this whole thing as I possibly can. And I think we owe each other that. And I think the idea that we don't and that we shouldn't think that deeply or we shouldn't uncover problems and issues and we should just go about our lives, I don't think that makes sense. I don't think that makes sense mathematically. It doesn't make sense logically. I think we, as a species, owe it to ourselves to be honest with ourselves. That's the best benefit that we get from being around other people, is to understand the real information as they see it. And you can process that any way you like. You can look at it and put it through the filter of ego and personal circumstance and all sorts of things that make people have opinions that are biased in one way or another, whether it's a liberal or a Republican. But when you get past all that, if you really get to see how a person is thinking when they're honest. And when they're not, you don't really know who you're talking to. You're dealing in this fantasy world of You're dealing in this world where someone's pretending to be something because it looks like that looks best on the numbers. You know, like they've looked at like some sheets and say they prefer Christian, nothing Mormon or anything crazy like that. This is what people prefer, so let's go Christian. They prefer a person wears a tie and a suit all the time, so let's dress in the appropriate manner. And they sort of slowly but surely segment themselves into this ridiculous population of pretenders.
So a world of people in entropy, making the, quote, safe bet, but then when everybody does that, the Titanic basically goes down.
I don't think you can have a safe bet anymore. I think it's fake, and I think that way of talking is annoying to people, and I think we've only accepted it because we've had to. And I think now that it's 2012 and we have the kind of access to information, there's the raw information, not sanctioned by CNN or sanctioned by Fox News or the raw. You get it from people on cell phones in Bahrain, and
of the gatekeepers over.
I think that model doesn't work with the access to information that we have today.
Everybody says mainline television and media is dead, but I heard you say it 15 years ago, before I even met you, a year or so later, when you came to visit Austin. I mean, how did you see it so far out?
Well, it wasn't just me, man. It was like that song, that Don Henley song. Is it Don Henley or Glenn Frey? Who has that song, Dirty Laundry?
Oh, yeah.
It's not an Eagles song, is it? Who is it?
No, I think that's the first guy.
Yeah, Don
Kick
Henley,
them all
right?
Up,
yeah.
Them all down.
It's Don Henley, right? Is that who? Anyway, the guy's from the Eagles. That Dirty Laundry song, man. That was in, like, the 80s or something,
yes.
Wasn't it? Beautiful song. But it's a show. The problem with making the news a show is you know, like, I was watching this Fox News thing. We were just talking about it, where
the Fox News people had to, like, laugh and joke about being upset about Obama losing. They were like, you know, maybe can they ask them if they would take Obama with them as well? I don't think they would do that. So it's like this, like, really joke, but it's really what it is. It's like this sanctioned opinion that we're upset that we lost, that we're really, we're, you know, it's almost like you're ragging on a rival football team.
It's like WWF wrestling. It's all fake. So shifting outside of that, you talk a lot about the nature of reality. The nature of reality, Joe, what is it at your core when you wake up at 4 a.m. in a hot sweat? What do you see out there?
See, that's the thing. There's no answer to that. It's too confusing. You could take a position if you wanted to, but there's no real answer to it.
We're a manifestation of the consciousness of the universe.
What we are is what we are, and I don't understand it. And to try to box it up and either limit it or be overindulgent in my appreciation of it, or whatever it is, it is. And there's some real rules to this thing, whatever the hell it is. And one of them that seems to make sense is that you gotta be nice to people, and you gotta enjoy this thing, and you gotta spread as much fun and happiness as you can. And if you can do that, you're like a generator of happy feelings, and people wanna feel happy. Like you literally can generate like a whole, a whirlwind of happy feelings. You can make happy communities. You can make happy connections between other people. And one of the best ways of doing it is to give them your real feelings about things, and to give them, you know, stand-up comedy, and to give them podcasts.
So what the universe wants is reality.
Well, this is my reality. This is all I can comment on. And my own physical, personal reality.
Instead of somebody else's. And that's the key.
Well, you can get defined easily by other people's perceptions of you. My whole life, I was convinced, when I was a young man, I was convinced I was a loser. Absolutely convinced. Until I started getting really good at martial arts, I never thought I was good at anything. I just had a very low self-esteem. And I was limiting myself by what I thought were other people's opinions of me. This is when I was a really young kid, and I didn't figure this out until I was like in my 30s. But I think that you absolutely can be limited by your perceptions of someone's definitions of you. But you can break through that stuff. That's what you break through with discipline. That's where you break through with hard work and concentration and focus. And that's why it's so important to have, like, either a discipline or an art or something that you're trying to create or something that you're really focusing on. Because if you don't have, like, a point of focus as a human, I think it's very hard to get through this life and have an appreciation for true struggle. Because our physical struggle with what our bodies are designed for, the caveman of 10,000 plus years ago, our bodies are still designed for that. That physical struggle doesn't really manifest itself when you're sitting in front of a cubicle, you know, in front of a computer in a cubicle, in this unnatural position all day. I think the whole situation is very confusing for the human body. And we don't get the tests that we need in order to have what you would call personal sovereignty. So you gotta impose those tests on yourself.
Just be real, and that's all you can do.
That is all you can do. But my confidence is not real. Like, I'm not a confident person. I'm an honest person, but I'm as terrified about possibilities as anybody. I mean, anybody who's ever seen me, like, look at videos of animal attacks and see how I cringe and I am terrified of animals. You know, I see, like, wild animal attacks, and I hear about, like, that little baby that got dropped in the zoo in Philadelphia recently.
Dogs.
You know,
but
I hear about that.
You're tied to your original.
Woo! Dude, animals scare the out of me. They scare the out of me. So I'm not, like, a confident person. I'm an honest person. But
I think honesty is confidence.
But I think a lot of our issues are social, and a lot of our issues when you deal with confidence, it's a lot of it is the way people are with each other. And I think we don't understand when we're doing it that we're limiting people. but that you can really limit a person's potential by defining it for them at a young age.
And that's what the system does. They dumb everybody down. They try to limit potential. And for me, that's
it seems to be a human thing, though. It doesn't seem to be just a system. It seems to be almost just a human weakness, a lack of character, and a lack of someone explaining to them or them experiencing where true happiness comes from, which is, you know, it sounds like really hippie, but true happiness comes from making other people happy. True happiness comes from being around happy people and enjoying each other's company.
That's
really hard for people to wrap their heads around, because they always associate true happiness. No, true happiness is with, like, titles, you know, or, you know, numbers, or, you know, objects that you possess, or whatever it is.
How high you sit on the bird box.
Yeah.
Let me ask you this question, then. Looking at this and where the whole world is going, what does your gut tell you about the future of humanity?
You know, there's a lot of people who are pessimistic, and I'd say that's your own choice. Like, you could look at all the possibilities that could happen to us just naturally and really be terrified every day you got out of bed. If you stopped and thought about asteroids and super volcanoes and shifting of the polar ice caps and new ice age and Jesus Christ, you could go into a coma just sitting and thinking of the possibilities of natural shit that can kill you. Earthquakes and hurricanes and tornadoes and tsunamis, and it never ends, literally. Poison spiders, what the f***? There's so many different ways you could die. And I think that we have to be able to address that as human beings.
At your gut level, Joe, what do you think about the bin Laden raid?
I don't know. You know, first of all, I think that being a position that I think whenever you talk about any intense military operation like that, those guys, those Navy SEALs that did that, those Navy SEALs?
Yes.
Those are some of the baddest on the planet. I mean, I have a lot of respect for someone's ability, fortitude, character, discipline, the type of discipline involved in being a Navy SEAL. I have a tremendous amount of respect for those type of human beings. But what I don't necessarily trust is the people that make the decisions that put these guys into certain positions. It's them that I trust implicitly. Like, I understand the kind of discipline that it takes to be elite at anything. And when you're in an elite at something as life or death, as being a Navy SEAL, you're a bad period. So I don't ever want to say anything that's disrespectful to anybody that's in that position, because I respect their intentions 100%. But it sounds like a silly story. Like, everybody says this guy's been dead for a long time. They said that bin Laden, I mean, I see all these different people who've said that bin Laden had already been dead. I don't know. I wasn't there. I have no information other than some that I read in the newspaper or watch on TV.
But the official stories turn out to not be true. And
it seems like they lie about everything. We ready to do this? Seven minutes?
Good.
7 minutes.
I actually talked. I'm not going to get the whole story. But mm-hmm. A guy is a Navy SEAL, been to his house in Texas.
Yeah.
Turned out, well, I'm going to give too much away. My family knows him. He's not in SEAL Team 6, but his buddy from the few that lived.
Uh-huh.
They blew up a helicopter that night. They went in, killed the target, brought it out, blew the helicopter up, told the SEALs that was bin Laden, the helicopters that got away. And then the other SEALs got mad, and they blew up. Remember the SEALs?
Uh-huh.
SEAL Team 6, the helicopter blew up a month later. And the SEAL said...
So wait a minute, you're saying SEALs attacked other SEALs?
No. What I'm saying is, they send a bunch of helicopters. They
go in
to kill a target.
Right.
They're told, get this target, it's bin Laden.
Right.
They bring bin Laden's body onto the helicopter, it blew up.
Right.
They blew it up. Then the rest of the SEAL Team 6 complained about it, and most of them died and blew up. They killed most people on the raid.
Oh.
Remember a month later, the SEAL helicopters?
Yeah, I thought that was just another unrelated incident that was part of what they're doing over there is incredibly dangerous.
No, it is, but that was the biggest loss in the entire Afghan war.
Right, but that is there a real connection between those two of them?
I talked to the SEAL, and he said, we believe Al-Qaeda put a bomb on the plane, on the helicopter, or the government did it.
Right. But it could have been that they just got shot down, too, right? Is that possible?
Well, they said they never...
I mean, they're in war.
I know, but they never. But that was the biggest loss of SEALs.
War. Sometimes that's how shit goes down. Remember that Scud missile that landed on that the barracks in the first Iraq War? There was like no deaths up until that. Very few deaths, and then this one Scud missile got through and killed a bunch of people, and then that was that one big event. I mean, big events do happen.
Could have been true. You're absolutely right. But I mean, my whole point is the fake Situation Room photo. They later said that was fake. The burying at sea.
Well, yeah, it seems like a silly story. But the problem is, this is the real problem. The only reason why I should even be saying something like this. The only reason why you should qualify when you say something like that. Like, it seems like a silly story.
No, I understand.
But this is my reason for saying this. I saw the Jessica Lynch story, which was the girl who was injured in the Iraq War. They said that they had to go in and rescue her, and there was a gunfight, and they rescued her. And she said that no such thing ever happened. And she got in a lot of trouble and took a lot of heat by refuting the official statement. They tried to manufacture a narrative about
her life. To get women in the military. What about Pat Tillman?
Yes, exactly. That's two things. Well, Pat Tillman, the bottom line is, whatever happened with him, he was killed by friendly fire. Now, that's not what was in the initial report. The initial reports of his death were that he had died in defending his country.
And the coroner wouldn't lie and said it was homicide.
Well, was it homicide or was it friendly fire? I think there's a lot of confusion when you're in a war.
They shot him at a distance that he begged for his life. They came up and triple tapped him right in the forehead.
But how do you know that though?
If you weren't there. Coroner's report.
Yeah, but see man, unless you were there, unless you saw how it happened, the coroner's report is going to show he got shot.
No, I hear you. It's just when you have a history, Pat was sending letters back to his family, said, I'm going to go public on the war on drugs. This whole thing's a fraud. Mm-hmm. It's a lie. And then he magically dies, and I've just learned how their MO works. But no, I hear you.
But what you're saying is that's in the game too. It's possible.
Well, I even talked to his brother, and
I see his brother's hardcore, man. I saw his brother at a reading at his funeral where he was talking about how Pat didn't believe in God and Pat's dead, you know. And it was like it was really intense. It was really intense. And his story is a strange one. I mean, it's a guy who, you know, this square-jawed, uber-handsome, super-powerful athlete who decides he was going to defend his country like that football was secondary in his mind. He was a real patriot. I mean, this is a guy who really abandoned this multi-million dollar lucrative career as a professional athlete to go and defend his country. I mean, that is a powerful human being
and
that cannot be
stronger,
denied.
Saw it was a fraud, was going to come back and speak out.
Yeah, and was strong enough to realize that he had been duped and didn't, you know, look, he's a dangerous guy to have against you. And I think that the system, you know, doesn't like people like that. And does that mean that he was murdered? No, because I think war is hell, and I think horrible things happen in war, and I think it's very possible that he could have accidentally gotten killed.
Joe, you
got to
go out in 3 minutes, so let's just get this question.
3 minutes, ladies and gentlemen, before the New World Order shuts this place down!
Exactly, no, your fans are going to demand it. Obama. We talked about Obama deception. You called it. Not that we're saying Romney's good either, but the point is, Obama, NDAA, three times the pot raids of Bush. I mean, what do you say about Obama and 4 years not facing re-election and the power of the pardon? Look at that camera, Joe.
I think it's really hard to be the president of the United States. I think that our layman's view of that position is probably so woefully inadequate in really getting a feel for the magnitude of the pressure that guy must face from all sorts of different positions. And I think that, I think I have to go on stage.
Come on, I'm following you. Get out there with him.
Yeah. We ready to rock?
Wait, Brian.
It's quarter past. Oh yeah, I'm sorry, Brian. Look, you panicked. He panicked, Brian. Yeah, see that?
Hey!
Stand by. You ready?
You ready? Are you ready for it?
Music.
You gotta. What's that?
You're doing your dolphin bit.
Yeah.
I forgot about that. All right, cool.
Thanks.
You ready to go on stage, Brian? And then
show the mic. No. That was this mic gonna be live?
Yeah. Ready?
Yeah, let's do it.
of all, I want to apologize for that fucking terrible song that was just playing. Holy shit. We're in Austin, motherfucking Texas. You can't play me, some Stevie Ray Vaughan, you dirty Don't tell me you love me. Shut the fuck up, you weak beta. Ladies and gentlemen, I love the fuck out of all of you. Thank you very much for coming out. I got Duncan Trussell in the fucking house, ladies and gentlemen. And before Duncan goes on stage, I'm going to bring up one of my best friends on the planet. You know him as the co-host of the Joe Rogan Experience podcast and the producer of the Death Squad Podcast Network. Give it up for my man, Mr. Brian Redman.
That's an awesome crowd out there, man. That crowd is awesome. They're so fired up. So much crackling out there. Woo.
What is on your mind? I mean, what do you want to say to millions of people out there watching?
Well, we were just talking about this whole Obama thing, and I think that what I said earlier is really important to consider whenever you're talking about the President of the United States. I don't think we really even have one iota of an understanding of the pressures that guy faces. And I think if you look at him and look at like the things he's written and look at the way he speaks and his positions that he holds and the way he debates things, he seems to be a very moral man. He seems to be a very wise guy, a very intelligent man. But I think that he is in an unbelievably difficult position, and a lot of the influences that are in politics and in national decision making are not based on moral decisions. They're based on financial decisions. And they're based on the idea that making money is equal, at least equally as important as benefiting human beings, as at least as equally important as something that would have a positive impact on human beings. Like, it can't be thought of that terrible things can be done, the environments can be polluted, that waste can be dumped into holes, it's toxic for hundreds of thousands of years. As long as you can make money from doing that, that should be able to be done. It should be some sort of a balance in between. And I say that's ridiculous. Like, it's gotta be thought of from a position that anything that gets done, if it has a negative impact on humans, if it has a negative impact on the environment, it really shouldn't be done.
I agree with you, but the globalists run this eugenics operation where they say we're doing this for the good of the earth, but then they do the GMO, they do the toxic waste dumping, they do the nuclear testing,
yeah,
while lecturing us about, you know, how much carbon dioxide we exhale. In fact, I'm glad you brought that.
Well, it's a crazy position, because we find ourselves in this system that's already been created before we were born. I mean, before you and I could ever drive, cars had always, they had existed for many, many years. People had been driving them. We grew up. We drove cars. That was just it. You know, I mean, we were born into this situation.
It's like kids with computers. They won't even know any difference.
But what I'm saying is, we were born into this situation where we were contributing this poison into the environment. And then it became this consideration of how much poison can you put in. I think we were born into this situation where, you know, we have these highways we travel to every day at work. Every day you get in your car and you start it and you drive. And then one day when you're in your 20s, whatever the hell it is, you realize, whoa, I'm a part of some crazy pollution machine. Like, okay, I thought I was just driving to work. Like, I thought I was doing what people had always done before me, but now I have to consider that maybe the people that had set this path before me really didn't understand the end game, really didn't understand the true consequences of lighting gasoline on fire to propel explosion engines and driving around with it. You know, that, like, really, that's not good. You don't want to breathe that. You and I are both parents, and we both knew each other before we were parents. We knew each other when we were single, and I think having children of your own, you have a greater understanding of what a child really is. And a child, a human being, is just this bundle of potential. You know, I mean, how much energy does this battery have? And the energy can be wasted in a negative manner, or the energy can be focused in a positive manner. And the wrong situations in people's lives can put them in the wrong positions to make the wrong decisions, which sends them further and further and further down an undesirable path until they find themselves some horrible psychological piece of shit. And I think that at the root of that horrible psychological piece of shit, whether it's a dictator or it's a corrupt politician or it's a, you know, an evil CEO, is a broken child. The heart of that is a person who didn't learn that your love for humanity should overcome your love for ones and zeros, and that you cannot be able to sacrifice your love for humanity for ones and zeros and be happy, because you'll realize you're some sort of a cannibal on life if you do that. You're a person who has gone towards this thing that doesn't even mean anything, these numbers and objects, and put it at the forefront of the most important thing in your how do you affect the universe profile. You're not concerned about being nice to people. You're not concerned about having a positive impact on people. You're more concerned with making ones and zeros.
And when you don't care about other people, doesn't it really say you don't care about yourself?
It does. And see, we're not taught that. It sounds like hippie bullshit. But it really truly is how the human race interacts with each other. You really have to be nice to other people to be happy. You have to. If you're not, you won't be happy. And, you know, we all make mistakes and we all find ourselves in positions of frustration, and we've all acted out and yelled at our dog when maybe we shouldn't have. And, you know, there's pressures in this life. But I think it's really important to recognize what those truly are, and to understand that at the end of it, we can alleviate a lot of how we deal with in this life if we really treated people the way we would treat them, as if they were ourselves living another life.
92% of nuclear reactors are leaking. They're building more. 20 years ago, they cared about having problems. Now they've just raised the level of radiation, in some cases 1,000 times, on the isotopes at Fukushima. The government knew the tuna had high radiation hit in California. They still fed it to people. In 1990, they wouldn't let troops use DU because they knew in the studies it killed them. After 1990, they just said it's fine for you to use. There is a self-destructiveness, because these scientists all talk about talking to other scientists, and they go, oh, humans won't be here in 50 years anyways. So what? Let's just do it. There's almost like a self-destruction switch that's been flipped. So some groups are flipping the self-destruct switch. Others are trying to transcend and say, hey, let's not do this. What do you say about just these two rushing rails in the world? Do you agree or do you disagree? Do you have something to add?
I think we're definitely, society is in an odd position where we require certain types of energy. We require electricity. There's really no getting around running a city without electricity the way they're set up right now. And because of that, we have this deep dependence on massive amounts of power. And most people really don't want to think about where that comes from. It's a real issue. And when you have to deliver power to all these different cities, you have to deliver power to all these different people. Like, you need some sort of a massive source. And that needs to be considered. And it's not going to be considered unless we understand that this nuclear power thing, although it's very efficient and it's very powerful, it is scary as f***. And if it goes off the rails, it's nuts. It poisons an area for hundreds of thousands of years. You don't want to be anywhere near it. You can't go near it. You can't go there. You'll die. If you go and stand there, it'll kill you. Like, man, is that our only option? Isn't it sunny out here all the time? Should be really, especially in California, shouldn't we really be experimenting with ways to cut these nuclear power plants, stop them, and like make these giant solar banks? Is that possible? And there's millions
solar
of acres.
Solar panels don't blow up and make your kids die.
Yeah, and we still don't understand what the effects are of those gigantic towers that are like right over some people's houses. Have you ever gotten out of someone's car or gotten out of, you know, in front of someone's house and they live near one of those places?
Yeah.
It's like right under those giant wire tower things.
It's been proven. Listen, when you drive under with an AM radio or even XM, it cuts out.
Yeah.
It's so powerful. No, no, they've totally proven those.
That feeling is weird. I've only done it once. I was working in Boston, and I was doing construction, I think. It was like when I was in my young teens. And we got out at this site, and it was near one of those towers. I'm trying to piece it together in my memory without manufacturing any of it because it was a long time ago. But all I remember is I remember for a brief moment being under one of those things going, whoa.
No,
like
you can
feel it. Like, we were close. We were fairly close to it. I forget. I was maybe like 17 years old, so I don't really remember exactly.
No, you can feel it.
There was a weird feeling in the air.
Listen, if you walk in front of a microwave running,
yeah.
it's not real heat, but you can feel it. I mean, there's no, I won't even use the microwave in my house now. I've had you on many times. It was always exciting, and you were always one of the most popular guests, hard to get, busy guy. Now, it's reached like crazed level, foaming at the mouth to get you on. What the hell zeitgeist have you had?
I don't know, man. I just did the same thing and just kept doing it. I don't know. I don't know what's going on. I think it's got to be the podcast. That's the most obvious possibility.
And if you do it just over and over again, it's real.
Yeah, well, you know, and we have as many interesting people as we can, like you had that John McAfee guy, and we had that guy on too. That's the type of guy that I want to talk to. Fascinating characters. We have a lot of authors, really interesting, intelligent people.
And it's not left or right. It's just wide open discussion.
Yeah, look, I'm not left or right. You know, there's a lot of about me that's left, and there's a lot of shit about me that's right. I hunt. I just started hunting this year. I killed a deer, and I totally became a hunter. I'm like, Jesus Christ, if I could do this and get most of my meat this way, I would way rather do that than buy food from the grocery store.
Quantify that.
Yeah, well, we know about all the different antibiotics and different things that they pump into cows, but on top of that, cows are not supposed to be eating corn. And most cows that you buy in a grocery store, they're corn-fed cows. Because corn-fed cows get really fat. And by the way, it is delicious. I'm not knocking corn-fed beef. It's, some of the most fantastic steaks I've ever had.
Oh
God, I love steak, man. I'm a steak eating man. I went to Morton's the other night. I had a fat New York strip. Oh, I loved it. And I'm sure it was corn-fed. But, there's healthier cows are grass-fed cows. Their bodies are designed to process grass, and unfortunately, that's not told to us in school. We don't really understand that. Most people don't really like delve deep into nutrition enough
hunting,
to find out that
hunting it's natural. It's not that you like killing something. You're designed to go out and get it. And then it's weird when you're butchering it. It's like, wow.
Yeah.
It's like instinctive. I know how to do this.
I didn't necessarily feel like that because, first of all, I did it on a TV show. I did it on this guy's, show. It's called Meat Eater. This guy's Steve Ranella. And, he's not just a professional hunter. He's a really smart guy, and he's an author and a really
you want a beer?
A historian.
Get your beer before you go out?
Yeah.
I'll get it.
I got one right here, man.
Right,
I got one.
Do you
want a beer? That's what's going on. It didn't feel natural to me, but I had seen so many of his episodes of his show and of Ted Nugent's show. I'd seen so many different deers get butchered that it seemed normal to me because I knew what to expect. You know, and although I'd never butchered a deer before, I had killed a lot of fish. You know, I'd done a lot of fishing when I was a kid. So, I knew that thrill, the thrill of fishing, which is very similar in some weird primal way to the thrill of hunting. They're very similar.
Exactly, but people that don't hunt, they think you just want to go kill something. No, that you're in this mode of being in the woods with that bow and arrow or that rifle, waiting and then picking out what you're going to shoot. I mean, it's so primal.
Yeah.
And I don't have time to hunt a lot anymore, but people that go and buy their food at the store but then demonize people
hunt,
it's crazy.
Brian just got off stage.
Hey,
come
where's
here.
Brian? Brian?
That was awesome.
Brian, what do you say about the... Come over by the microphone. What do you
how
say about
how
the
was
Detroit?
It? Come over, have a seat right here.
We're not into celebrity here.
Where's your mic? Right here.
But what do you make of Joe and you as well? But just the meteoric rise. What do you chalk it up to?
It's great because now, for the first time ever, we're actually connecting with an audience that is exactly the audience that. You know, before it was like, oh, that guy from Fear Factor or that guy from UFC or getting your ideas out to somebody. It was always like, I saw him on TV. I think he's cool. But now it's like you listen to a podcast. My best friends don't know me as well as people that listen to the podcast every day. Like
No, they get to know you.
They get to know me. The biggest biography known to man.
Yeah. I mean,
how many, like 300 episodes?
Yeah.
So it's for the first time we're actually getting people that are coming to our audience to the shows or to whatever or that are 100% we know everything about you. We like what you do. You know, this is not like I saw you on TV, you might be funny or not. No, these people know us. And that's the first time that's ever happened.
And there's
ever.
Very few people that don't do it's a podcast, it's video too, but it's basically talk radio.
Right.
And the thing is when it's not scripted, I get to wear I have to tell people things that are true that are even embarrassing about me now because it's like it's so weird. You can feel the energy. You guys want to talk about that? Because, I mean, you brought this up. Elaborate on how strength, because few know this. Few get to talk hours a day in front of people and then learn that it becomes a real relationship.
Well, yeah, it definitely does. And you know what else is? You God damn, you learn so much from those people, man. You know, even people who are critical, like they send you a link to correct you, like this is the real information, and you have the inaccurate information. Like, if you don't have an ego about all that, if you could deal with the fact that you might be wrong or you might have jumped to a conclusion, there might be many possible scenarios.
It's a giant thing.
You learn so much from people on Twitter, man. You know, a lot of people will complain about like negative things on Twitter. I don't get that much negative on Twitter, but I occasionally get like, yo, I'm gonna punch you in your face if I see you, faggot.
Yeah. You know?
But well, maybe. It might not even be grab, that. Like something from some of the negative stuff. Like even if there's like a ton of negative. Usually there's like 1% truth to it.
That 1%
will kind of stick in the back of your head where you're like, all right, he took it to like the next level, but I do understand that 1% of what he's talking about.
Yeah, you can get a hater who's like 90% hater, but 10% has a point. It does help you. I really believe it. It's a terrible feeling, that feeling when someone's hating on you, but I find it very beneficial.
Yeah.
Because for two reasons. One, because it's like snake venom. Because like if you get bit by a rattlesnake and you've ever been bit by a rattlesnake before, it will f*** you up. Like someone who has never been famous and then all of a sudden decides to do a reality show and then they get all these insults hurled at them from every direction online. That has got to be horrific. Yeah. That's just going to be torturous. But when you take a little bit of hate venom and a little bit of hate venom, then you develop an immunity to it. You kind of understand what it is.
It becomes enjoyable.
Well, then it becomes a checking mechanism, and I look at it almost like as if it's an algorithm. And I look at it like, well, this negative coming in, like how much does it affect me, and how much does it affect the positivity that I put out? Like, if I dwell on it, well, then it'll surely me out. But if I just look at it and if I truly look at myself to say, okay, do they have a point? And if they do have a point, if I am being a like I gotta, that's a very important to be honest about that and to look at that. And to, that's a really important thing about growth. Yeah, you're gonna have to edit that word out, ladies and gentlemen.
Shut the door.
Even online. but I think that's really hard for people to do. You know, it's really hard for people to take the negatives and turn them into a positive. But when you put out the majority positive, like the most important thing is you got to put out, it sounds hypocritical coming from the two guys that put out the Carlos Mencia video, but the reality is the more negative you put out, the more negative comes back at you.
And
you don't have to do it. You don't have to pump out negative. You can even, when negative comes at you, you can even go, well, so sorry, I feel that way. But well, I'm not connected to that.
I actually find it entertaining when trolls attack me if there's no truth in it. But even when there's some, I mean, it's a guilty pleasure, but I know the point you're talking about. I mean, it's almost like a feedback or almost like a focus group where you can see yourself clearer.
when you have something like CNN or Fox News or anything, you have not only do you have a news outlet, but you also have an entertainment program, and you have a bureaucracy. You have a bunch of people behind the scenes. There's a bunch of people trying to influence this and influence that. There's too many cooks in the kitchen. With Brian and I, it's just Brian and I. We don't have to talk. You know, if Brian comes to me and says, "Hey, I think we should talk about this on the podcast," I go, "Okay, are you into it? Like, what is it? What is it about it that you're into?" Sure. He goes, "Oh, this is important. This is something f***ed up about this."
So the answer is,
what's interesting to us? That's what it is.
Not exactly. Not everyone who wanders is lost. If I was to ask you, where is Joe Rogan going, would you say I've already arrived? It's just being real.
I don't think about it, man. I think that's a big waste of time. And that all I think about is, am I making enough money to support myself so I don't have to starve to death? You know, am I making money to pay all my bills? Am I not getting crazy? Because I'm a very indulgent person. I don't want to do anything stupid. Okay, that's out of the way. Everybody, the family's taken care of. What's next? What do I want to do? And then do that. And I think that is the only way to live your life.
What is the greatest pleasure?
I'm just lucky. Look, I'm just lucky that everything that I do, I can get paid for.
What's the greatest pleasure of, say, making $40 million that you can take care of your family?
I don't make that much money, man. Where do you come up with $40 million, man? Dude,
yeah,
I gotta call my accountant. It's absolutely, being a father, it's absolutely super massively important to take care of your family. It's a very, very, very important feeling. It's certainly a motivation. I hear a lot of fighters that become dads, that becomes one of their bigger motivations.
They get tougher, don't they?
They do. They get more dangerous. They get more disciplined. I think fathers, oftentimes, that takes them to the next level. It's one of the reasons why John Jones is such a bad motherfucker. He's got two kids. You know, that guy is, he's providing. That's a very important.
For them.
Yeah,
you're gonna destroy.
There's a motivational aspect of children, certainly. I think.
Yeah, I found as soon as I started having kids, before I was such a nice guy, it was over. And it was just like.
Yeah, you're genetically driven to provide for them. But when that's taken care of, then the other idea is look at your fellow man as if they're also a part of your extended family. It's f***ing hard to do. It's hard to do. It's hard to do. It's hard to throw your own bullshit out the window. It's hard to.
That's what makes me mad. Is some woman walked out in front of me today in a parking lot, and I slammed on my brakes. She slapped the hood of my car, and I'm rolling. I said, "I'm sorry, ma'am," even though she was in the wrong. And she said, "Look at you in this big old truck. You piece of garbage." And then my son was next to me.
Wow.
And I snapped at her, and I was like, "Well," I said, "where are you from? California?" Not knocking folks in California, but she goes, "How do you know that?" And then this woman with her runs over, gets in my face. And I'm like, "Look, I said I was sorry to you. You walked out in front of me." And I've noticed that's when I...
Alex Jones, you need yoga in your life.
You do.
And you need some yoga. Listen, I got to go on stage any minute now. I'm going on stage any minute now, so we got to end this fucking thing.
All right, we're going to end it right here. Joe.
Alex.
What is the secret of the universe?
There's no secret. I have no f***ing answers, man. You can't ask me that. What am I, a wizard? Listen.
You are a wizard.
Don't be silly. Don't be a silly person. The secrets to the universe is that it's a f***ing secret. The whole thing's crazy. The universe? Come on, man. That's a big question. That's a big question.
Well, here's the final question.
14 billion light years.
You started the interview with my last question. I remember meeting you in 1998, 99, 14 years ago, whatever it was. And you were like, "Yeah, I know a lot of this is true, but you're going too far with that." Has not a lot of what I talked about...
Listen, man, I will tell you this, and I give you credit for this all the time. There's a lot of things that you used to say back in the 90s. I thought you were crazy. You were just ahead of your time. You were way ahead of the curve. You were way ahead of the curve on a lot of that was just massive conspiracy theory nonsense in the 1990s. Stuff that people would say, there's no way the government would ever do something like indefinite suspension or detention, rather, of American civilians with no trial. They would never do that. Completely unconstitutional. Boom. There it is. That your video, I recommend this video all the time to people. 9/11, the road to tyranny.
Yes.
When you showed that the World Trade Organization in Seattle was clearly invaded by agent provocateurs who were most likely military people.
The police
you
spoke
saw
out.
The police spoke out, the military grade shoes, the fact they weren't able to arrest these guys and they had to let them go. All that stuff that you showed of these people came into a nonviolent protest and became violent and then turned it into something that the police had to respond to. I mean, I never even thought that that would be in the menu of the military. I would have never believed it would. And then many years after I met you, the Freedom of Information Act documents for Operation Northwood were released. That was way after I met you.
Yeah, years.
Years later. And I remember, wow. I remember reading that going, like, Alex isn't crazy at all. Like, they really planned on blowing up civilian jetliners. They were going to have a drone jetliner and blame it on Cuba and get us to go to war with Cuba. They were going to do all sorts of crazy things. Like, that was really in the menu for, you know, the 1960s. Like, that, I thought you were bananas with some of the stuff you were talking about. And a lot of that stuff that you were talking about has turned out to be absolutely 100% true. I got to go on stage and do comedy.
Do it.
Me out.
Great job.
Thank you, brother. Thanks very much.
Hey, but hey, like to tell the secret, it was all in Rand Corporation documents. They admitted it.
Yeah.
They bragged they're doing this, Joe. That's why I freak out.
I used to have this joke about the future of reality TV is that there's going to be a reality show about a cameraman on a reality show. And then it's going to be a big hit, and then people are going to go, man, I want to know who the cameraman behind the cameraman is. And then there's going to be that show. And then what's going to happen is the world's going to be filled with reality show cameramen watching each other.
Exactly.
And it'll be like two mirrors facing each other.
Check out JoeRogan.net and check out our podcast, The Joe Rogan Experience, or on iTunes under The Joe Rogan Experience. And check out DeathSquad.tv or DeathSquad on iTunes for even more podcasts if you like what Joe does. We have Kevin Pereira from Pointless and Ryan Keeley and Dana D'Aramon and a bunch of funny people. So
wait a minute. Is that Joe Rogan right there?
That's him.
No.
Right there.
Can't see him.
That's him right there.
Holy mackerel. Oh, my God, ladies and gentlemen. All right, Alex Jones signing off for InfoWars.com and PrisonPlanet.tv. And remember, if you're watching this transmission, you are the resistance.
And I'm about to go on stage, I think, any second now. I've got you, but Duncan is... This is the part where he goes... He's doing this, like, a trance. He goes through a trance. It's like being possessed by a demon.
It's
I
evil.
Think he may be part of the New World Order. Is that possible?
I think so.
I think you might be right.
I got nothing, guys.
That's it. Here we go. Free training over. Austin, Texas, bitches.
As Skynet continues to rise, most Americans have no idea the arsenal their own government is prepared to use against them. Walking weapons and unmanned drones that will find their way to U.S. soil if they haven't already. But the future is not written in stone. Join InfoWars for the first ever drone mob December 8th at Zilker Park in Austin, Texas. This family-friendly event is to inform the public of the weapons that target us. Bring your own drones and spy planes as we make the statement that we don't want our weapons turned against us. Be there at 11 a.m. There will be some amazing giveaways and even a video contest. So bring your camera, because whoever films the best drone video at the event and posts it up on YouTube will receive 1,000 Federal Reserve notes. And be sure to use the hashtag DroneMob on Twitter and visit Infowars.com for more details.
Alex Jones here with some very important breaking news. The latest edition of InfoWars magazine, December 2012, is out. And no, we don't really cover people that think that the world is going to end on December 21st. We are predicting the world will not end. But we are predicting that the end of our free republic may take place if people don't wake up and get aggressive and angry and speak out against what's happening. This man wants your guns. That is the cover of the 60-page glossy magazine, jam-packed with information and the truth. And you know what they say, the truth will set you free. You can buy the magazine at cost in bulk in groups of 10, 20, 30, 40, 50, right up to 100 to give everyone you know. And believe me, people will open this up. It is full of unbelievably powerful graphics, cartoons. We've got artist profiles on patriots out there that are exposing the globalist. And it's got several articles breaking down the facts that Obama and his globalist controllers want to disarm the American people and are going to try to ban all semi-autos. The facts are in this magazine, and this is the most important of the four issues we have ever put out. And when you do sign up for the subscription, you don't just get 12 in the mail. When supplies last of the previous issues, we will put back issues like the November issue, Zombies, Are You a Zombie?, breaking down how television has put the general public into a trance-like state. You will get that when you sign up for the next 12 issues in December of 2012. My goal is to expose the globalist and to win the info war so it doesn't become a physical war. We've seen Hillary Clinton saying that they're winning the info war. Top globalist Zbigniew Brzezinski says that nationalism is growing and that people are waking up against outside forces because of populism and alternative media. This particular issue of the magazine is the one to give friends and family. It's the one to put under the tree or in the stocking. It's the one to leave at church. It's the one to leave at the dentist office. This is the one, the December issue of InfoWars magazine with Ron Paul, the attack on the Second Amendment, the police state, the GMO takeover. It's all there and all available at InfoWarsStore.com or by calling 888-253-3139. Get your subscription or buy the magazines in bulk today. I'm Alex Jones signing off for InfoWars.com. Until next time, remember, if you're watching this, if you're receiving this transmission, you are the resistance.
Science News just a couple of weeks ago came out and said, uh-oh, Houston, we have a problem. They put out new warnings on statin drugs saying
diabetes.
Increases your risk of diabetes by 50%, increases your risk of Alzheimer's disease by 100%.
Oh, that's amazing.
If you go on a cholesterol-restricted diet and you take cholesterol-lowering drugs, statin drugs, you will get Alzheimer's disease.
Oh, yeah.
Okay? And I said that in 1971, and they all laughed at me.
You need cholesterol to make neurons.
That's right.
To make brain
you
cells.
Must eat eggs. The egg is a perfect food. You start out with a chick on that egg the size of a lentil. as thick as a piece of paper, but the diameter of a lentil, right? I mean, we're talking about 3 or 4 millimeters in diameter, 1/10 of a millimeter thick. That's the chick, and there's the yolk and the white. That's all food for the chick. In 21 days of incubation, you have a chick with a beating heart and lungs and legs and all the muscles and feathers and skin and eyes and brain.
All from that little egg.
All from that little egg. And so it's a perfect food.
Yeah.
And so if you want to keep your brains, you want to have a great sex life, you want to you want to have your adrenal glands that are happy. You don't want to have menopause. You don't want erectile dysfunction. You better be eating 6 to 10 to 12. I eat a minimum of 8 eggs a day. I try for 12 every day.
Where else can you get? What other foods would you recommend?
Eat the chicken skin. Throw the chicken away. Just don't eat it fried. Okay. You can eat
fish skin.
You get a little bit of cholesterol actually in salmon, in the fat underneath the salmon skin. You can get it from red meat. You can get it from lard and butter. You get a little bit of cholesterol in butter.
What do you think about, what nutrients would you use with your cholesterol? Any particular vitamin E or essential fatty
acids? Well, sure, you have to take the 90 essential nutrients, which includes vitamin E, and we're talking about selenium and vitamin A. All these things are antioxidants in their own right. Now, vitamin A, why did they call it vitamin A? Because it was the first one discovered. When it was discovered, over 4,000 years ago, by the Egyptians, they could get rid of night blindness, which we know is caused by vitamin A deficiency, by giving people extracts of liver.
Liver.
They'd squeeze liver, get the juice out of the liver, give it to you, and night blindness would go away.
Vitamin A is a stupendously important vitamin as well. How about for the immune system, vitamin A for the immune system?
Of course, because it's an antioxidant.
Yeah.
It helps protect you from free radicals and also helps your immune system fight against organisms, transmitted organisms like bacteria and viruses and fungus and yeast and all kinds of stuff. So every one of the 90 essential nutrients is important. They're called essential nutrients. They're not optional nutrients.
The word essential, that's what that means. Mm-hmm. Now, real quick, I wonder if you could touch upon the digestive system. Mm-hmm. We got 80 million Americans with digestive problems. 1 out of 3 Americans is dealing with some kind of digestive issue. When we know with liquid nutrients, you can bypass a lot of that. But what would you recommend for folks in terms of not essential nutrients necessarily, but accessory nutrients that people can use to support digestive wellness?
Okay, well, first of all, the old theory used to be you are what you eat, right?
Right.
That's not right.
It's what you absorb.
You are what you absorb. Yeah. Very good. You are what you absorb.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And so when you pick the right number, when you said 30% of Americans have a terrible digestive problem, Mayo Clinic came out in 2009 and said 30% of Americans have gluten intolerance. Now, there's some communities that eat a lot of grains because they're, for whatever reason, it's cheap. It's stored for years in case there's some imminent disaster, right? We're talking about the Amish, the Mennonites, the Hutterites, the Mormons, the Seventh-day Adventists are all vegetarians. They eat a lot of grains. They have 80% gluten intolerance. Now, what that does is you lose the villi in your small intestines, and you get celiac disease, you get diverticulitis, you get irritable bowel syndrome, inflammatory bowel disease.
And you don't absorb your nutrients.
You lose 85% ability to absorb them. So what's 15% of nothing?
Nothing.
Very little.
Yeah.
Right? And so the problem we have now is all these people now are being told to eat whole grains. And so there's all this gluten intolerance happening. So people are not absorbing what little nutrition there might be naturally in the food.
Right.
And they're not supplementing. And so you have to get off of gluten. You have to supplement properly. And then 99% of these problems go away. When you're talking about diseases, for instance, like, you have a baby born with muscular dystrophy, cystic fibrosis, cleft palate, they're born deaf and all this kind of stuff. Invariably, the mother will be gluten intolerant. Because what little nutrients are in the food, she can't absorb them very efficiently.
So she's got a malnourished fetus.
She's got a malnourished fetus.
Wow.
It's not genetic.
Oh, yeah. It's malnourishment.
But here's the thing that gives doctors a little bit of hope that their theory is correct. Gluten intolerance is passed on through cord blood or breast milk. It's not genetic, but the glutens are passed on.
The allergens.
They're not even allergens. It's not an allergy. It's an intolerance.
So, in other words, the proteins, the peptides are passed through in the milk, and the baby becomes intolerant to it as well.
Yes, exactly. Now, here's the deal. Nobody's allergic to poison ivy because there's no pollen involved. Nobody eats it for salads. But everybody is intolerant of it. Now, you rub poison ivy on yourself, you don't get an allergic reaction.
You don't get an immune reaction.
Mm-mm. You have a contact dermatitis.
Right.
The same thing when you eat gluten and you have a gluten intolerance, you don't get an allergic reaction. You get a contact.
It's a mechanical issue. Would you say it's a mechanical?
It's a chemical irritant. You get a contact enteritis.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
So it's not necessarily an allergic reaction.
It is not an allergic reaction.
It's still an immune reaction.
No.
It's not even an immune reaction. Is it mechanical?
It's a chemical irritant.
Uh-huh. So gluten is an irritant.
Oh yeah, it's a contact
there's
enteritis.
Bakers will get it too. There's Baker's dermatitis.
Well, yeah exactly. Yeah,
same
thing.
Same idea.
And so what you do is you get these people on gluten-free diets. Their asthma goes away in 2 weeks.
It's amazing.
And you have a woman who's had 3 kids in a row with muscular dystrophy. You put her on a gluten-free diet. You give her the 90 essential nutrients appropriate for her body weight. You throw in some extra selenium. She'll never have another child with muscular dystrophy. She can have 10 more kids, but none of them will have muscular dystrophy because it's not genetic.
That's amazing. Now, are there other things in grains aside from gluten? Gluten gets all the press, but there's other things as well. Are there other proteins, other peptides?
Well, sure, there are allergens. You can get a wheat allergy, but it's not necessary to be gluten intolerant.
Uh-huh. Is grain a problematic food, in your opinion?
Yes, it is, because human beings were never designed to eat grain.
Yeah.
Now, the animals that do very well with grain are
ruminants.
They have
extra stomachs.
They have 4 stomachs.
Yeah. So if we have 4 stomachs, maybe we'd be able to eat grain. Yeah.
We have a single stomach, and we don't have the capacity to handle grains like an antelope and a buffalo, you know, a buffalo and the horses and cattle and sheep and goats and all these animals with 4 stomachs. When you look around the world, other than one-celled animals, the 4-stomach animals are the most universal form. They're everywhere. On every continent, every place, there's more species of ruminant animals than there are elephants.
So our digestive system just isn't designed to eat these kinds of
things. That's
right. Isn't that interesting? You know about Jared Diamond, right?
Mm-hmm.
He wrote a paper called Agriculture was the worst thing that ever happened to us in human history, something along those lines. But the idea being that we're not supposed to be eating these kinds of foods.
Germs, guns, and...
Guns, germs, and steel. Yeah. But the idea is that we're not supposed to be eating these kinds of foods. What about gluten-free? What about gluten-free flours and gluten-free grains? What's your take on those?
Well, gluten-free grains are what? We're talking about millet.
Yeah.
Buckwheat, which is not wheat.
Quinoa,
and you're looking at rice. You ever hear the old macrobiotic diet?
I don't know a lot about it.
Well, during the 60s, the hippies, all those flower children were running around eating the macrobiotic diet, which was essentially a German cleansing diet that was made from brown rice and steamed vegetables. It was only supposed to be done for 2 weeks, but they felt good on this stuff, right? And so they added a little bit of fish to it, maybe some eggs, so you get enough protein so you could live on them forever. And, I mean, these people were solving problems like eczema, asthma are all going away in this macrobiotic diet. And they said, it's the magic of the brown rice. No. It's because they gave up wheat.
Uh-huh. That's
okay?
Interesting.
And then there's this Michio Kuchi who popularized, he's a Korean guy who popularized the macrobiotic diet. He had terminal pulmonary tuberculosis. I mean, 90% of his lungs were filled up with tubercle abscesses, and he was beyond hope, according to the doctors, right? He got on the macrobiotic diet,
gluten-free.
And 3 months later, he's gluten-free, he's cured.
That's a great story. Now, I don't know if people really recognize that you are a prolific writer, and you write some great books.
I've written a little bit of stuff.
You write some great books, and what I like about your books is how you pull together all these disparate fields, these disparate sciences, anthropology and sociology and history and economics and nutrition and chemistry and biology. You pull the whole thing together. And you got a great story, and I think it's in Hell's Kitchen. I'm not sure which one. I think it might be Hell's Kitchen, where you talk about the wood ash.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just a brilliant story about how people got the idea that you could actually get healthy by using ash. And you see sometimes you'll see ash on in the ingredient decks or in the nutritional facts on dog food. And tell us a little bit about this whole idea of ash and minerals and how that works in terms of nutritional power. And nutritional
well, sure.
Purposes.
Well, this goes back to the caveman.
Was that Hell's Kitchen, by the way?
It was in Hell's Kitchen. There's a little bit of that in the book Rare Herbs and Cures.
Okay.
And also a little bit in Let's Play Doctor, Immortality.
It's
in all of it. Because in the old days, even in the caveman days, they had fires, right, for their fuel.
Right.
And the cave's going to get filled up with ashes.
Right.
So they had to throw it outside. It didn't take long to recognize that. You know where they were throwing those ashes? The green stuff, the leaves were twice as big than where it didn't get. So when they started gardens, they would throw the wood ashes into the gardens rather than just throw it down the stream or in the recycling bin to save the earth, right? They'd put it in the gardens. Well, wood ashes are not ashes. Wood ashes are really the minerals that the tree had sucked up out of the ground. And when you burn the wood for fuel, the minerals don't burn. So you have a powder in the fire pit, the fireplace, the wood stove.
The ashes, the minerals that aren't burning.
Yes, they put them in the garden. So then the okra and the tomatoes and the corn and the sweet potatoes and the beans and peas and cucumbers suck it all up. Eat your vegetables and your grains. You got it that way. You got your minerals in that fashion. Nobody made the connection yet. They were using it as a fertilizer, but they never made the connection. They were getting minerals from it. They never did that. When I know the exact moment when everything changed. It was 3 o'clock in the afternoon, Monday, September 4th, 1882, when Thomas Edison pulled the switch on the first commercial electric generating plant. 3 o'clock in the afternoon, Monday, September 4th, 1882, he pulled the switch on the first commercial electric generating plant on Pearl Street in New York City on the bluff overlooking the construction of the Brooklyn Bridge. Within 10 years after that, every city dweller had switched over to electricity for heating and cooking. How many wood ashes?
They didn't need any more wood ash.
No, they needed them. But how many wood ashes were left over when you cooked and heated with electricity?
Nothing.
Zero. So what did they do to replace all those minerals they'd been getting for thousands of years? Nothing.
They got sick.
They got sick now for diseases they never heard of before.
Oh, how interesting. So with electricity.
Yeah. It just displaced where our source of minerals.
That's interesting.
It was sort of a change of just like right now, you can't hardly find a payphone in an airport because of cell phones have replaced it. Newspapers are going away because all the little classified ads are going away because of the cell phones and eBay and all that kind of stuff, right? So is the postal service going away because of email? Yeah. Okay. Well, the same thing happened when you had the electric stove come along.
There's no ash anymore.
No ash anymore. But they didn't make up the difference. Nobody knew to make up the difference. And so wood ash has been, when you look at the top, and this is where the book Immortality comes in, we looked at the top 20 longevity cultures on Earth. We did it through National Geographic. We read 60 years worth of National Geographics because we knew we'd have to spend millions of dollars of our personal money and years and years and years. And then people would say, well, Wallach, we don't believe this one, and we'd argue about that one. So we took everything from the National Geographic, give them plenty of credit and so forth. We used their pick of the top 20 longevity cultures. We have 40 times 100 as we do. They have 100-year-old per 250 population. We have 100-year-old per 10,000.
Wow. Okay. Which cultures?
Well, we're talking about things like Sardinians, the Nicoyans in the Pacific coast, to Costa Rica, really weird places you never heard of, Okinawans, right? And so the Hunzas up on the Pakistani border with China.
Lake Titicaca.
The Titicacas and that kind of stuff. It's really, really weird. All top 20 longevity cultures are third world cultures. They're illiterate. They have no doctors, no medical system. They have no utilities.
Glacier milk. What do they have?
Well, I thought that's what it was in the beginning, but the universal thing that they picked was they all use wood for fuel.
Oh.
And by dumb luck, pharmacist Ben, by dumb luck, when you look at the agricultural schools at the universities in the countries in which these cultures exist, by actual analysis of the land that they grew their food on, and they got the trees that they use for wood, for fuel, they had 60 minerals in their soil. By dumb luck.
By dumb luck.
Yeah.
That's great.